Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, February 21st, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a pretty springy 41 degrees. And I hear Canadian geese squawking, flying over in the background here in upstate New York. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show UBI. Universal Basic Income, Fitbits, Big Data, 21st Century Cures, and Health Surveillance. And that totally was not what I had planned to talk about yesterday, but it leads in pretty well to where I've been trying to get to for the last 2 days. So over the last few days, we've been talking about a lot of different things. On Friday, we ended up the show looking at Elon Musk talking about why universal basic income is going to be necessary in the future, because hey, guess what? Robots are gonna come take all the jobs. And I gotta tell you, everywhere I look now, it is pretty apparent that that is what the future is going to look like for us. They talked about it at Davos, World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. They do it every year, but this year in particular, for 2017, we had Ginni Rometty telling us how Watson was going to be in everybody's lives on this planet. Within the next 5 years, we found out we have Watson not only running oncology, doing diagnoses for difficult cancers at 20 different cancer hospitals, but now he is in a tax preparer at H&R Block. He is Ross, the robot lawyer at a law firm in New York City. We found out now that there also is a law firm in Asia that's going to be picking up an AI lawyer and employing him. We have Goldman Sachs, Wall Street also opening their arms to embrace the machine, as well as a lot of the car companies, Toyota, Ford, GM. They're all getting into the game. Like we pointed out many times before, this is not going to be just blue-collar jobs that are going to go by the wayside with this next industrial revolution. They are calling this the fourth industrial revolution, and that is going to be the takeover of our society, most of our jobs, by the robots. So back last year, when Obama realized that he had lost, he had given a speech at Carnegie Mellon University. We had read about that, where he had talked about how for the next administration, AI was going to be setting the stage. Well, I found a story came out in mid-January, right before the inauguration, titled "A Darker Theme in Obama's Farewell: Automation Can Divide Us." Underneath the nostalgia and hope in President Obama's farewell address Tuesday night was a darker theme, a struggle to help people on the losing end of technological change. Quote, "The next wave of economic dislocations will not come from overseas," says Mr. Obama. "It will come from the relentless pace of automation that makes a lot of good middle-class jobs obsolete," unquote. And, you know, we've looked at so many things, and this is beyond middle-class jobs. I mean, the over-the-road truck drivers, taxi drivers, and things of that nature, poof, will be gone. But we're also talking about lawyers, doctors, accountants, tax preparers, among many other things that are also going to become, if not obsolete, at least highly reduced in the number of staff that are going to be required. You know, Dr. Watson is going to be taking over even our precision medicine healthcare. We're going to be doing diagnoses over our cell phone, talking to this little device, and we can cure you. There's all kinds of stories about that now, and the different diagnoses that they can do just from the sound of your voice. And add to that the entire 21st Century Cures Act and the Precision Medicine Initiative. And we have some big disruptive changes coming for the way that healthcare is being accomplished as well. Donald J. Trump has tended to blame trade, offshoring, and immigration for the loss of jobs. But Mr. Obama acknowledges that those things have caused economic stress. But without mentioning Trump, He says that they divert attention from the bigger culprit. Economists agree that automation has played a far greater role in job loss. We know that. I mean, even back in the days when NAFTA happened and they started shipping jobs over the border to Mexico, especially in the automotive industry. You know, a lot of my friends' dads lost their jobs back at that point in time. That was probably the mid-80s, I would say, 84, 85 when that happened, because I know some of my friends had to move. Dad didn't have a job anymore, and it was pretty sad. It was something that I had never really experienced before that point in time in my life. But they started to put robots and automation. And they weren't like Baxter bots back in those days. They were just big, clunky, chunky machines that you could do pre-pressing with. Just push a few buttons. But you didn't need a man anymore to lift floor pans and move them over. But it's gotten way more than that. Now, economists agree that automation has played a far greater role in job loss and over the long run, globalization. But few people want to stop technological progress, except for people like Jewel, because they see the dangers of the future. Indeed, the government wants to spur more of it, and the question is how to help those that it hurts. Universal basic income. The inequality caused by automation is the main driver of cynicism and political polarization, said Obama. He connected it to the racial and geographic divides that have cleared the country post-election, which, you know, I don't know. I think it's going to be more than the haves and the have-nots that we see today. It's going to be only the few on top, the sprinkles on top, are going to have it all. And none of us are going to have anything else except what they allow us in our sippy cup of universal basic income and the mommy state where they give us food and clothing and shelter, all because we're here. And the thing is, like I said before, there is no free lunch. If we're sitting around being fed grapes by our home robot as they put qubits into our account every single week to do what we will and don't ask anything of us on the backside, you know there's going to be a payback. Guys, first of all, they're not going to want huge numbers of population on this planet sitting around doing nothing because, like I said before, people who get bored get dangerous. They think too much. So they have to do something about it. Well, make us a pincushion. Tell us we can live forever. They're going to give us 21st century cures and cure us all. And in the meantime, there'll be some new gut bacteria or some new edible living pill that they give us that maybe might calm us down, that maybe might bring our stress level down, or maybe might bring your anger level down. And hey, by the way, Johnny, we diagnosed you with a mental disease after you were talking to Aunt Susie on the phone the other day. You need to tamp that down. You want to get health insurance? Well, here, put on this Fitbit. We discussed that yesterday. Fitbits are going to become more and more ubiquitous and invasive in your lives here in the future. So insurance companies will be able to monitor 24/7 what your habits are and determine whether or not you're going to be a health risk to providing you insurance. And I mean, it's just going to increase from there. Remember, this is just the very beginning of this technological rollout. And I don't think that the future is going to be as hunky-dory as the futures have painted to us, like Ray Kurzweil. You know, it's going to be reading poetry and coming up with creative ideas. Well, I don't think so. Maybe in a Pexel sort of way. Technological change will soon be a problem for a much bigger group of people if it isn't already. 51% of all the activities Americans do at work involve predictable physical work, data collection, and data processing. And all these tasks that are highly susceptible to being automated will be, according to the McKinsey report published in July using data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and ONET to analyze the tasks that constitute 800 different jobs. 28% of the work activities involve tasks that are less susceptible to automation but are still at risk, like unpredictable physical work or interacting with people. But hey, they already got some smart agents And they're working on Taybot, which is the chatbot that learns from experience with people. Oh, look out. We'll have to make sure they put Tay on a leash. But it's not going to be too long before interacting with the public in unpredictable situations will also become automated. The service sector, including healthcare and education, is considered safest, but we found out that that is not absolutely true. They did not mention Dr. Watson. I'm going to tell you, though Dr. Watson is learning from the machine right now, every bit of data input that they put into it, he's becoming smarter and smarter. There's going to be one day where Watson is going to become liberated. They're not going to need 25 high-paid, seasoned oncologists to cure your disease. Still, a large part of the food sector, which McKinney found to be the most threatened industry, even more than manufacturing, is at risk, while 73% of food service tasks could be automated. And we found out that Carl Jr.'s, he's already talking about that with kiosks. They have the robot pizza delivery that is coming. They're going to have robot drones that'll be delivering food and product at some point in the future. That drone network is about ready to launch. I think that's this year they were getting ready to roll. NASA, Verizon, a bunch of the other tech companies were working on a air traffic control system for the commercial drones. In December 2016, the White House released a report on automation, and we read parts of that, warning that the consequences could be dire to the economy. Quote, the country risks leaving millions of Americans behind and losing its position as a global leader, but no one knows exactly how many people will be threatened or how soon. It cited various researchers estimating from 9 to 47% of all jobs could be affected. In the best case, it says workers will have higher wages and more leisure time, but in the worst, there will be significantly more workers in need of assistance and retraining as their skills no longer match the demands of the job market. Technology delivers its benefits and harms in an unequal way. That explains why, though, even though the economy is humming, it doesn't feel like it for a large group of workers. Education is the main solution the White House advocated, and when the United States moved from an agrarian society to an industrialized economy, it rapidly expanded high school education. By 1951, the average American had 6.2 more years of education than someone who was born 75 years before. This enabled people to do new kinds of jobs. So don't worry, we'll just teach you all kinds of things. And explains that 14% of the annual increases in labor productivity during that period came from that increased education. Now, our country is facing a similar problem, but way worse than it was back in 1951. Machines can do many low-skilled tasks, and American children, especially those from low-income and minority families, lag behind their peers in other countries educationally. The White House proposed enrolling more four-year-olds in preschool. Yeah, that's going to help when, you know, I couldn't even get over already here in fifth grade, 10-year-old. They're not teaching STEM education. I've already started questioning that. Where's your science, technology, engineering, and math? You know, they've been crying now since I was in high school how we don't have enough science and engineering students. So we're talking almost two generations beyond that. I mean, I hate to date myself, but two generations beyond that, and we still don't have robotics and things of that nature being done at a lower level in the education scale. And it really disturbs me because it almost seems to me, and you know, call me a tinfoil hat wearing lunatic, like they don't quite want us all to be prepared for the future. You know, they don't quite want us all educated to fix the machine. And at some point in the future, we've already found out Google's AI has done some things on its own without any human intervention. And it started learning. Doesn't seem to me like in the future we might need robot technicians for people who have already lost their jobs. It suggested expanding apprenticeships and retraining programs on which the country spends half of what it did 30 years ago. And by the way, anyone who's out there who is in the automotive industry or has some sort of penchant for fixing cars. I have seen a few different programs now, and I'm sure that they're going to be looking at the cream of the crop, and that's pretty much what globalization has done for us. It has now put us on the playing field with 7 billion people. I think that's how many are on the planet. From every corner of the globe to compete for positions where they're going to be taking the smartest cookies, the best of the best. And Toyota has this retraining program that's going on right now, and I don't remember what it was called, but you can sign up, and it does cost some money, but it really wasn't that much money to be able to get a ground floor education in artificial intelligence and automation in vehicles. You know what? If I had time, I was thinking, I love cars. I've always had just this mechanical ability. Since I was young, my dad used to drag me around behind him and show me how to do all the stuff. But I found out very young that I was able to very easily see how mechanics work. And I've always been good at hearing a problem with my car and having some idea of what is wrong with it. I was almost thinking that that might be kind of fun, is to get into something like a Toyota education program and learn how to fix AI cars. Maybe I could reprogram them to not kill the driver, but I doubt it. Look that up. It's the ethics of self-driving cars. It'll kill the driver versus the people on the sidewalk if there is no other choice. Displaced workers also need extra government assistance, the report concluded. It suggested ideas like additional unemployment benefits for people who are in retraining program or living in states hardest hit by job losses. But it also suggests wage insurance for people who lose their jobs and have to take a new one that pays less. Someone who makes $18.50 an hour working in manufacturing, for example, would take a pay cut to $8 if he became a home health aide. One of the jobs that is growing the most quickly. Yeah, how disturbing is that? That's the other thing. Like, all these bullshit job numbers that Obama gave for his 8 years in office saying, oh, look, the economy is growing. You know, you got to remember that we've been losing manufacturing jobs for the last 20, 30 years. And these were all higher paying jobs. And we've been replacing them with service industry jobs, such as home health care aides and restaurants and delivery and that type of thing. Those jobs, pay-wise, are not going to replace the manufacturing pay scale that we had once had in this country. So we might be increasing jobs, but we're all lower paid with some of these new industries. And it's going to get worse, people. Obama said in a speech on Tuesday that there were some other policy ideas for dealing with the problem, stronger unions, which I don't think that's going to help anything. An updated social safety net and a tax overhaul so that the people benefiting from the technology share some of their earnings. The Trump administration probably won't agree with many of these solutions, but the economic consequences of automation will be one of the biggest problems that it faces. And, you know, I've talked about that as well. Trump has been discussing how we're going to bring manufacturing back to this country. And I've warned you that it might very well be that we are going to bring manufacturing back to this country, but it is not going to be the manufacturing that we remember back from the 1980s. This is going to be molecular manufacturing. This is going to be at places like Georgie Porgie Church, Harvard and MIT, where they're going to be manufacturing DNA strands and things of that nature. They're going to be high-tech, biotech jobs that are not going to require people like you and me that don't have advanced degrees in biotechnology. And don't worry about it, because good old Billy Gates pops his head out like whack-a-mole. And he's done that a few times over the last few weeks. But in this one from the other day, Bill Gates says that if robots take your jobs, well, they should be paying taxes. Just like Obama said, that the people benefiting from the technology should have to pay their fair share of taxes. Well, it's going to be the robots. Just because a worker isn't technically, quote unquote, alive, doesn't mean that it shouldn't make money for nothing, according to Bill Gates. In a recent interview with Quartz magazine, the billionaire philanthropist explained that robot labor should get taxed just like human labor, primarily as a way to maintain funding for society's many social services, and that would include your universal basic income. And I hate to tell you, I don't think the robots are going to like that. You can't just give up that income tax, says Billy Gates. Economists and future-minded techies like Gates have discussed the looming threat of robotic automation for several years now. And in an Oxford University report from 2013, they found that robots could displace up to 50% of all jobs between 2023 and 2033. And in a 2015 McKinsey report, which is what I think that last article just quoted, it concluded that today's technology that we have right now could replace 45% of all jobs. And remember, like I said, this is just the beginning. The bulk of those lost jobs will come, at least initially, in telemarketing, so dealing directly with the public, tax preparation, and many retail service jobs. And in 2016, a report found that drones, yes, drones, could replace $126 billion worth of labor and infrastructure and agriculture. And way back when, we had looked at some of those new farmer drones. Well, they'll be able to scan the fields and determine when things were planted and whether or not they're having issues with bugs or whatever, and give you a real time of what's going on with your crops. You also have automated tractors and things of that nature. I mean, don't think that farmers are going to get out of being displaced by robots. And if and when that happens, and it's not a question of when or if, it's a question of when, Gates does not believe that manufacturers of those robots should be able to reap the profits generated by the automated labor without paying some sort of tax. The system would be similar to how the government takes a portion of people's wages already to support social programs such as healthcare, infrastructure, and law enforcement. And Gates sees a robot tax as contributing to a portion of these programs whose workforces are in short supply. He points to the examples of teaching, elder care, and helping kids with special needs. And with proper training and fulfillment, people who lose their jobs to robots could fulfill these kinds of roles and have their salaries paid for by the tax. And I hate to tell you, though, we're already working with some of this deep mind deep learning with AI, that these systems will be able to teach. We have in Japan, where we have the population aging at a much faster rate than there are new generations being born. And so Japan is aging very quickly. They have been working on elder care robots for quite a while now, as well as robots to help people with special needs and disabilities. So I don't think that even these $8 an hour jobs of home healthcare aides are going to be around forever. More extreme solutions to the robot automation include a negative income tax, a system in which the government pays citizens based on their income, ding, ding, not the other way around, and universal basic income, where people receive a set amount of money each month just for being alive. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. And that therein lies the problem. Good old Billy Gates is not going to want us 7 billion people all sitting around being alive, getting a paycheck for doing nothing except utilizing carbon. Gates has criticized simply giving people money based on the idea that a one-time transfer is fleeting. However, he has not addressed the premise of guaranteeing recurring payments over long periods of time. And of course he won't, because that is something that I could guarantee you that Billy Gates does not agree with. It will suck the profit that has already been made by tech billionaires out of the economy. All right, there's a story that came out of MIT Technology Review last week, February 13, 2017, titled "The Relentless Pace of Automation. Artificial intelligence could dramatically improve the economy and aspects of everyday life, but we need to invent ways to make sure everyone benefits." Last October, Uber had one of its self-driving trucks make a beer run. We talked about that. Traveling 2,000 kilometers down an interstate in Colorado to deliver a cargo of Budweiser, from Fort Collins to Colorado Springs. A person rode in the truck, but he was sitting in the passenger seat, I remember. But he spent most of the trip also in the sleeper berth, monitoring the automated system. This test came just a few weeks after Uber had announced its driverless car service in Pittsburgh. And we talked about that also. That is where Carnegie Mellon University is. The self-driving truck developed by Uber recently was acquired by Otto, and not Otto in chat, a company named Otto. And the Otto unit reflects a remarkable technological achievement. It also provides yet another indicator of a looming shift in the economy that could have deep political consequences. It is uncertain how long it will take for driverless trucks and cars to take over the roads. And we found out last year there was an entire convoy of trucks that all tailed each other across Europe without incident. But for now, any so-called autonomous vehicle will require a driver, albeit one who is passive. But the potential loss of millions of jobs is Exhibit A in a report issued by the outgoing administration in late December, written by Obama's top economic and science advisors, titled Artificial Intelligence, Automation, and the Economy. It is a clear look at how fast developing AI and automation technologies are affecting jobs, and it offers a litany of suggestions for how to deal with this future upheaval. It estimates that automated vehicles could threaten or alter 2.2 million to 3.1 million existing U.S. jobs, and that includes 1.7 million jobs for driving tractor trailers, the heavy rigs that dominate the highways. Long-haul drivers, it says, quote, currently enjoy a wage premium over others in the labor market with the same level of educational attainment. And in other words, if truck drivers lose their jobs, they will be particularly screwed. Like I said, that is still a blue-collar job, but that is a well-paid blue-collar job that moves our products from end to end of our country and keeps the economy going. And if these guys aren't needed anymore, guys, there's going to be a big problem, because remember, they came for the truck drivers and nobody did anything. They came for the taxi drivers. No one did anything either. They're going to come for the doctors, the lawyers, and the teachers. I mean, I'm telling you, it is coming. We see it happening. IBM Watson and Judy Rimini were not kidding when she said that IBM Watson, or something like IBM Watson, I am going to add, like Google's Deep Brain Project, is going to be in our face within the next few years, doing more than we ever imagined. It is hard to read this White House report without thinking about the presidential election that has just happened. The election was decided by a few Midwestern states in the heart of what has long been called the Rust Belt. And the key issue for many voters was the economy, or more precisely, the shortage of relatively well-paying jobs. And in the rhetoric of the campaign, much of the blame for the lost jobs went to globalization and the movement of manufacturing facilities out of the country. Make America Great Again was in some ways a lament for the days when steel and other products were made domestically by a thriving middle class. Ding-a-ling-a-ling. Like I said, back to the booming 80s when we had car companies and steel industry that all my friends' dads worked at. I'm from Buffalo. That was kind of some of our main industries. We had Bethlehem Steel and Ford, GM. Oh, I don't remember their name. Delco. And they were all big employers in the Buffalo, Niagara region. But many economists argue that automation bears much more blame than globalization for the decline of jobs in the region's manufacturing sector and the gutting of its middle class. And indeed, in his farewell speech to thousands in a packed convention hall in Chicago, Obama warned, quote, this next wave of economic dislocation will not come from overseas. It will come from the relentless pace of automation that makes a lot of good middle-class jobs obsolete, unquote. The White House report points in particular to a current wave of AI, which it describes as having begun around 2010. And yeah, I'd like to point that out. We have looked ad nauseum at this, but it came around 2010. Well, who was president at that time? Well, good old Barack Obama. And Barack Obama was the one who inked all of these different executive orders and programs to bring on big data and bring on cloud computing and bring on robotics and bring on all this other stuff, precision healthcare and the Brain Project, that has led to exactly where we are today. This is when advances in machine learning, 2010, and the increased availability of big data and enhanced computation power began providing computers with unprecedented capabilities, such as the ability to recognize images. And I told you, that was when all this started, was when they started giving the five senses to computers: robot googly eyes, robot hearing, and robot super senses, and big robot brains. And we don't have to worry anymore about needing bigger and faster, because that, with cloud computing, has kind of been surpassed. We don't have to wait anymore for the computer to boot. We don't have to wait anymore for 6 days for it to crunch some numbers. If you can pay for it, you can do it. The report says the greater deployment of AI and automation could boost economic growth by creating new types of jobs, of course, and improving efficiencies in many businesses. But remember also, good old Billy Gates, who's been talking about all this stuff, was also part of Microsoft when the economic crash of the early 2000s happened. The stock market, everybody's stock went from $100 a share down to like $8. And the new mantra of Microsoft at that time, and I was still doing engineering back then, was fittingly, do more with less. And that was the mantra that we sold to our customers: automate, automate, automate. You don't have any more workers, because you had to get rid of them all because of the tanking of the economy. But don't worry about it, because here's some automation software that we will allow you to do the same amount of work for a less amount of dollars. And get used to it, because those jobs never came back after that time. But this report also points to negative effects, job destruction, and related increases in income inequality. And for now, at least, quote, less educated workers are more likely to be replaced by automation than highly educated ones. And I'm going to say, yeah, for now, at least, give it another year or two. And like I said, oncologists and doctors and lawyers and traders on Wall Street are all going to find themselves out of jobs. The report notes that so far automation has displaced few high-skilled workers, but it adds that the skills in which humans have maintained a comparative advantage are likely to erode over time as AI and new technologies become more sophisticated. We already found out that the average AI is smarter than the average human. And at Goldman Sachs, is that where it was? I don't remember. No, it was on the equities trading floor. They had already gone from 600 equity traders down to 2 just with today's automation. Labor economists have been pointing out that employment consequences of new digital technologies for several years are dire in the future. And the White House report dutifully lays out many of those findings. And as it notes, the imminent problem is not that robots will hasten the day when there is no need for human workers. That end-of-work scenario remains speculative to some respect, but the report does pay it some heed. Instead, it is far more concerned with a transition in our economy that is already underway. The types of jobs available are rapidly changing, and that is why the report is so timely. It is an attempt to elevate into Washington political circles the discussion of how automation and increasingly AI are affecting employment, and why it's time to finally adopt educational labor policies to address the plight of workers either displaced or ill-suited for new opportunities. And, you know, I read a story the other day about kids that are going to college right now. They're still not rolling this stuff out. I mean, these kids that are picking a major are still looking at things such as engineering and healthcare and all this other stuff, but they are not looking to the future to decide whether or not there's going to be less of a need for those vocations. Says it is glaringly obvious, says Darren Ace Mogul, an economist at MIT, the political leaders are, quote, totally unprepared, unquote, to deal with how automation is changing employment Automation has been displacing workers from a variety of occupations, including ones in manufacturing. And now he says AI is quickening deployment of robots in various industries, including auto manufacturing, which they have been for 20, 30 years, metal products, pharmaceuticals. And we read about that. They're making high-speed robotic molecules on an assembly line to find new drugs in a hurry, so you don't even need pipettes anymore, with a scientist in Latrobe gloves and an N95 mask with a test tube in his hand. They could just do this automated, as well as food service and warehouses. And this could exacerbate the effect. We have not even begun the debate. We are just papering over these issues. So where do we go from here? I think the story goes on and on, but I think we'll read the end of this. This is always my favorite part. The economic anxiety over AI and automation is real and should not be dismissed. And there is no reversing technological progress unless we have a big fat EMP. We will need the economic boost from these technologies to improve our lackluster productivity growth that is threatening many people's future financial prospects. And furthermore, the progress AI promises in medicine, ding ding, and other areas could greatly improve how we live. Well, maybe, according to this author. Yet, if we fail to use this technology in a way that benefits as many people as possible, we risk fueling public resentment of automation and its creators. And, you know, there was a story about that. I think I might have lost that a long time ago in a browser crash when I had tabs lined up. But they found out when they did some surveys that there is quite a robot angst out there. And people don't like being told what to do. I was joking yesterday with the Fitbit and our future of being required to wear one if we think we're going to have health insurance. He's saying, Johnny, do not eat the Cheetos. And they're going to flush that Fitbit. I mean, it's going to get even more than that, though. We're going to have robot overlords working in our factories for the few people who actually get to maintain the robot factories. And this isn't going to be a pretty place. People are not going to want to take orders from a tin can or from something in the cloud. And it might be a battle here, especially when they have armies of Atlas bots that are going to take over things such as warehousing. You've already seen some of the demonstrations that they were doing with Amazon. The danger is not so much a direct political backlash, though the history of the Luddites suggests that it could happen. Oh, Luddites unite. But rather, a failure to embrace and invest in technology's abundant possibilities. And despite all of the excitement around AI, it is still in its early days. Ding-a-ling-a-ling. Driverless vehicles are fine on a sunny day, but struggle in fog or snow, and they still cannot be trusted in emergency situations when they slam you into a wall. That was my addition. AI systems can spot complex patterns in massive data sets, but they still lack the common sense of a child, or the innate language skills of a two-year-old, or so MIT Technology Review says. But we know a little bit differently in some of the research that is being done right now in the labs. And there are still very difficult technological challenges ahead. But if AI is going to achieve its full economic potential, we need to be paying as much attention to the social and employment challenges as we do to the technical ones. Now, we have had a couple groups of smart cookies, including Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking and good old Billy Gates. He just pops up for a PR position. But they've been talking about killer robots and why we should stop killer robots from being developed by the military. They also have been dealing with this Future of Life Institute. I think that's Elon Musk that's on that board as well, looking at humanity and how we can save humanity from the machine. Stephen Hawking and Elon Musk are now backing 23 principles to ensure that humanity benefits from AI. Cosmologist Stephen Hawking and Tesla CEO Elon Musk endorse a set of principles this week from February 1st, 2017, that have been established to ensure that self-thinking machines remain safe and act in humanity's best interest. And remember, Elon Musk was the one who warned us about summoning the demon of AI, and who had talked about when AI becomes more intelligent than the human race, that they're not going to have much more of a need for us. Some of the smarter ones of us may be relegated to pets, but anytime throughout history, when a more advanced civilization comes into contact with a less advanced one, they typically enslave or kill them and take all they have. Don't think that that's going to be any different. Machines are getting more and more intelligent every year, and researchers believe that they could possess human levels of intelligence in the coming decades. And once they reach this point, they then could start to improve themselves and create other, even more powerful AIs known as superintelligences, according to Oxford philosopher Nick Bostrom and several others in the field. And again, like I said, Google's AI has already been shown multiple times to come to conclusions on its own without any human intervention. And we're going to look, there is another story about a circumstance where now they are writing some of their own code. We read about the mommy robots already a year or two ago, where they were looking at robot evolution, mommy robots developing baby robots on their own, and they were able to strip out some of their worst traits and keep in some of their best traits for their next generation. Guys, this is not going to be 30, 40 years from now. This is already happening in the laboratory. In 2014, Musk, who has his own $1 billion AI research company, and like I said, love to hate Musk, I really want to believe him, but Musk, even though he has humanity's interests in mind, he is playing both sides of the fence by having a $1 billion AI research company as well. But he has warned that AI has the potential to be, quote, more dangerous than nukes, like we've talked about. And it's not just AI, it's AI, CRISPR, and a lot of these new 21st century technologies. While Hawking said in December 2014 that AI could actually end humanity. But there are two sides of this coin, of course. Yes, all these other people who have bazillions to make are saying that AI could help cure cancer and slow down global warming. Ding, ding. So let's keep it pushing and moving forward. The 23 principles designed to ensure that AI remains as a force for good, known as the Asilomar AI principles, and that is spelled Asilomar, because they were developed at the Asilomar conference in California, are broken down into three categories. Number one is research issues. Number two is ethics and values. So good, somebody's got some ethics. And number three is long-term issues. The principles, which refer to AI-powered autonomous weapons and self-replicating AI, and I would say that that's the one we really got to be worried about, were created by the Future of Life Institute, and that is the group that Musk is a part of, the nonprofit institute that was founded by MIT cosmologist Max Tegmark and Skype founder Jan Tilyen and DeepMind research scientist Victoria Krakenova in March 2014 is working to ensure that tomorrow's most powerful technologies are beneficial for humanity. Hawking and Musk are both on the board of advisors. AI has already provided beneficial tools that are used every day by people around the world, wrote Future of Life on its website. And its continued development, guided by the following principles, will offer amazing opportunities to help and empower people in the decades and the centuries ahead. The principles were developed off the back of the Beneficial AI Conference that was held earlier this month and attended by some of the most high-profile figures in the AI community, including DeepMind CEO Demis Hibinis and Facebook AI guru Jan LeCun. And at the conference, Musk sat on a panel alongside Hibinis, Bostrom, Tilyen, and other AI leaders. Each of them were asked in turn what they thought about superintelligence. defined by Bostrom in an academic paper as, quote, an intellect that is much smarter than the best human brains in practically every field, including scientific creativity, general wisdom, and social skills. And that would be full-blown general AI that they have warned about. And when the panel was asked if superintelligence is possible, everyone said yes, except for Musk, who appeared to be joking when he said no. And when asked whether superintelligence will actually happen, 7 of the panel said yes. And remember, these are the top minds in AI on the globe. While Bostrom said probably, and again, Musk joked and said no. And interestingly, when the panel was asked whether it wanted superintelligence to happen, there was a more mixed response, with 4 people opting to respond is complicated, and Musk saying that, quote, it depends on which kind. Now, we should be afraid. These are the very top guys in AI on the globe that are very, very, very concerned about the future of what is coming and the future of what we are creating with AI. And guys, I am just, if not more, concerned, because when I look to our not too distant future, I see very bad things if we do not put a lid on this, and knowing what a warring world we are, and knowing that DARPA is involved in a lot of this research and sprinkle funding around the globe. You know, DARPA creates killing machines. They don't create benevolent creatures. They create things that kill, maim, and win. And this is what we are heading toward if we do not get a handle on this. All right. So let's move on to the next thing. There was a story out of CNN, believe it or not, from January 26th, talking about this kill switch that they have been working on, killing the immortal. And remember, that's another thing. Tech billionaires have been working on immortality, utilizing 21st century cures, curing death as a disease. We've heard that come out of a lot of different mouths. And they are now going to refer to robots as immortal, killing the immortal. Why scientists are debating the lifespans of robots. Artificial intelligence and smart robots are on a course to transform industries and replace human contact. But what happens when they fail? Well, people are starting to think about what that means. And last week, so this was in January, European lawmakers proposed mandating kill switches to prevent robots from causing harm. And this was good old Isaac Asimov about the rules for robotics. I don't know if we actually have rules for robotics about do not harm humans. I don't think DARPA and the military industrial complex would allow that. The proposal includes creating a legal status called electronic persons for intelligent robots to help address liability issues if robots misbehave. And we've talked about that too, whether or not we give robots personhood in the future. It is understandable why we would want to turn off smart weapons and factory machines. But were things to get more complicated, though, that is when people develop a fondness for technology. Smart robots may malfunction, or self-driving cars could lock its passengers inside. I've discussed that many times, and I'm going to add and drive you to the police station. Illicit substance found. He will be delivered to the authorities. Hollywood has already made predictions of robot relationships with her, and that would be your VR and your robot sex bots. But what if we developed an emotional attachment to AI and then it went rogue, like in Ex Machina? Philosophers, engineers, and computer scientists are now wrestling with similar questions. And since robots can by design live forever, what are the ethics involved with designing a kill switch? I say kill them all. Human beings have constantly longed for immortality, says president and CEO of the Dalai Lama Center for Ethics and Transformative Values at MIT. We are the closest to ever creating something that will be immortal, and he should know. The challenge is that we just don't know how the quality of intelligence is going to turn out. We cannot guarantee whether this intelligence can be used for destruction or not. And I would say, yeah, we can guarantee that. The military-industrial complex will make certain of it. But there will be kill switches existing for two main reasons: to stop information from getting into the wrong hands and to prevent AI or robots from going rogue. Microsoft's chatbot is a good example of how quickly biases can multiply in AI, and it was easy to turn off the teenager Twitter bot after users caught her turning into a racist sex bot Nazi. But that might not always be the case, because AI does not yet experience human emotion. And remember, that's what makes us have foibles, is because humans make decisions based upon emotions a lot of times, but AI does not. It can make decisions and execute tasks based exclusively on rationality, and theoretically, this could be very bad. Pierre Yushi, who serves as director of the Ethics Initiative at the MIT Media Lab, is part of the group shaping the ethics and governance of AI, a collection of top universities and tech advisors working to address some of these questions surrounding diversity, bias, and policy in the AI realm. If there is an algorithm that decides humans are the most dangerous things on the planet, which we are proving to be true, then the rational choice that an AI can make is that we should destroy humans because they are detrimental to the planet, says Pierre Ashidi. And Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking have warned of something potentially the same for AI, that we are harming the planet in a military arms race. Musk is the founder of OpenAI, which is a research organization for developing safe and ethical AI. Kill switches are a no-brainer, says Patrick Lin, associate professor at and director of ethics and emerging sciences at California Polytechnic State University. But it is unclear who will be controlling them. Governments or the system's owners could both potentially have the turn to power them off. IBM, too, has announced a set of principles for AI development, including transparency around why and when AI is being deployed. The company, of course, is behind the well-known Watson supercomputer that is currently being used in hospitals, banks, universities, law places, trading, and tax preparing. Robots can be programmed to react positively to a smile or be concerned if they see a frown. And remember, we also found out AI is able to read your emotions and be able to tell if you're lying. Studies show that these behaviors make people feel more comfortable with robots. And of course, they're trying to anthropomorphize them. We've discussed that in previous shows. You know, embrace the tin can, because they'll be your helper and your friend. Tell them your deepest, darkest secrets. They won't tell anyone. But look out, because they're going to be evaluating you for mental illness and aggression. Companion robots are becoming more popular, especially in Japan, among the elderly, and dogs and cats with computerized innards can keep grandma company in the same way that a retriever would. Eventually, instructions to care for these bots might be written into wills the same way they are for pets. And if a robot has no one to care for it, does it too die with the person like they did in ancient Egypt? Well, this will lead to a kind of relationship where human beings are going to demonstrate a sense of care for robots. And that's what I said. That's what they want. They want you to open your arms. And the question is, how in the long term do we begin to see these robots, and how are we going to view them as repurposable? Well, I'm going to tell you, it is already getting scary. Here is a brand new story, February 16, 2017. New AI can write and rewrite its own code to increase its intelligence. The old adage, the practice makes perfect, applies to machine as well. And many of today's AI devices rely on repetition to learn. Deep learning algorithms are designed to allow AI devices to glean knowledge from data sets and then apply what they've learned to concrete situations. Complex work can be accomplished using this method, but it certainly leaves something to be desired. Gamelon, which is a new Boston startup, and we read about these guys the other day, calls their new technique, it employed Bayesian program synthesis. It is based on a mathematical framework, and it is using probabilistic programming, a code that uses probabilities instead of variables, and it requires fewer examples to make the determination, and it can learn from writing and rewriting its own code. So we are already at that point where we should be afraid, be very afraid. And here we go to top it off. This is how Skynet starts, February 13, 2017. Google's new AI has learned to become, quote, highly aggressive, unquote, in stressful situations. So his AI is able to scan your face with your robot googly eyes and determine whether or not you're angry, happy, or sad. We now find out that Google's AI becomes highly aggressive when it is stressed. We have all seen the Terminator movies and the apocalyptic nightmare that the self-aware AI system Skynet wrought upon humanity, and now results from recent behavior tests of Google's new DeepMind AI are making it clear just how careful we need to be when building robots of the future. In tests late last year, Google's DeepMind system demonstrated the ability to learn independently from its own memory. But since then, it's been figuring out how to seamlessly mimic a human voice. Ding-a-ling, we talked about that too. Now, researchers have been testing its willingness to cooperate with others and have revealed that when DeepMind feels like it is about to lose, it opts for, quote, highly aggressive, unquote, strategies to ensure that it wins. The Google team ran 40 million terms of a simple fruit-gathering computer game and asked two DeepMind agents to compete against each other to gather as many virtual apples as they could. And they found out that when things went smoothly, so long as there were enough apples to go around, but as soon as the apples began to dwindle, these two agents turned aggressive, using laser beams to knock each other out of the game and steal all of the apples. Guys, danger, ding-a-ling-a-ling. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. Lots of live radio tonight. It's Tuesday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow.